You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or anyone associated with this radio station. So let's do it. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! All right, welcome to the Thunderbolt for April 3rd, 2020. When it comes to politics, we here at the Thunderbolt tend to march to the beat of a different drummer. And in that spirit, we're going to start this week's show off by contemplating the politics of Mr. Magoo. I sometimes compare public figures to Mr. Magoo, and I recently realized that this is probably a very dated reference. For those of us of a certain age, Mr. Magoo was a very popular cartoon character during the 50s and the 60s. Mr. Magoo was an elderly and extremely nearsighted gentleman who refused to acknowledge his near blindness, and he was constantly getting himself into crazy messes due to the fact that he couldn't actually see anything. And the thing is that in many of the episodes, Mr. Magoo had a Chinese servant named Charlie. And Charlie was a personification of every negative stereotype you could imagine for Asian people. However, it was Charlie who constantly rescued Mr. Magoo from his hijinks. And it was Charlie who was always himself getting squished or smashed or drug over the cliff or whatever as a result of Mr. Magoo's follies, even as Mr. Magoo himself just moved on to his next disaster, completely oblivious to Charlie's travails. I think that very few people realized either then or now what a truly subversive cartoon Mr. Magoo actually was. So, let us now continue our march to that different drummer by moving on from the politics of Mr. Magoo to the politics of Adolf Hitler. One very notable attribute that I have noticed about right-wing anti-abortion activists is that their central argument states that abortion is abomination because all human life is sacred. Okay, I can actually respect that argument. Even if I disagree about at what point a clump of cells transforms into a human life. The problem with their argument as they apply it, though, is that they seem to only apply their life is sacred standard to the embryos and the fetuses that have not been born yet. Because the rest of the public policies that these same people promote seem to hammer home the fact that once you're out of the womb, then you'd better watch your back. Because now, you are on your own. Well, it turns out that Adolf Hitler wrote a book. And it turns out that I read his book. Considering the issues of birth control and abortion, now it turns out that Adolf Hitler had a few thoughts on those very subjects that may explain this seeming hypocrisy. For you see, in the world according to Adolf Hitler, humans should have as many babies as possible in order to increase the pool from which they could choose the superior examples. And then after you have identified the superior examples, you discard the rest and start all over again. Besides a distinct lack of appreciation for the sacredness of human life contained within this policy, another problem with this philosophy is that flawed humans presume omniscient, godlike powers. The type of people who are anxious to assume such godlike powers are also generally the very last people that you actually want to be assuming those godlike powers. Anyway, there is your explanation for the seeming right-wing hypocrisy on this subject. Unfortunately, it is not hypocrisy at all. It is perfectly consistent, in fact. That's not a laughing matter. So next, I wish to speak to this thing wherein certain states are requiring certain IDs in order to register to vote. Yes. This is the only instance that I can think of wherein a citizen must prove that they aren't committing a crime in order to exercise a basic constitutional right. Voting under false pretense is a crime. And not only that, but it is a fairly serious federal crime that will get you prison time. All they need to do is for voters to sign a declaration under penalty of perjury that their information is true and correct. And then, if someone subsequently commits perjury by voting under false pretense, law enforcement is supposed to gather the evidence and prosecute them, just like they would for any other criminal act. But as with any other criminal act, they wait until after the crime has actually been committed before prosecuting people. And what makes this truly maddening is how blatant their true motivations are. Since it is getting to the point wherein cheating is the only way that Republicans and corporate Democrats can win elections anymore, they are purging as many far-left voters as they can from their voter rolls. They say that they're purging their voter rolls and that they're requiring IDs in order to register in order to battle voter fraud. Even though voter fraud is not only not a problem, but voter fraud is virtually non-existent. You're telling me that someone is going to risk 5 years in a federal prison to cast a single illegal vote, or even a few thousand votes, in an election registering tens of millions of votes? It hardly ever happens. And this theory requires you to also believe that voter fraud is almost exclusively a problem of communities of color and academia, since they are the ones invariably targeted. Election fraud, on the other hand, is rampant. But since both parties benefit from election fraud, then neither party does anything about it. And not only that, but as usual, when they are pillaging, the elites demonize the victims of their crimes and blame those victims for the state of affairs that the elites themselves created. And then they punish them accordingly by denying them the right to vote. And please note that in spite of the blatancy of this charade, they just keep doing it, and they just keep getting away with it. The Democratic Party and the media machine rarely, if ever, even speak of it. and then usually only to reassure people that it isn't happening, even though it not only totally is happening, but there is ample proof that it is happening. And as far as the rigged voting machines, just ask frigging Howard Dean. Bev Harris is the founder and executive director of the Black Box Voting website, where she tracks and documents our voting machine follies. And there's a video on the Black Box Voting website where Ms. Harris hacked into a vote tabulator and changed the official results within 90 seconds. Well, Howard Dean watched in amazement. Ms. Harris pointed out that an exceptionally talented high school student probably could figure it out. Also on the Black Box Voting site is an interview with a gentleman who created a computer program called Fraction Magic. What Fraction Magic does is that it simply treats votes as if they were money, meaning that Fraction Magic can divide each single vote up into 100 pennies. Thus, when the voting tallies come in, this program could take a few pennies from one type of voter and give those pennies to another type of voter. And since the program hides the pennies from anyone that doesn't have the secret code, then the general public and or investigators cannot even see the pennies. Unless they know to look behind that hidden door. Thus, for voting purposes, certain undesirable voters are literally reduced to a fraction of a person. Just like it used to be in the good old days. Yes, kids, this is the original intent of the framers in action. Making America great again, indeed. Right. So, you wouldn't know it from the American media, but with the notable exception of the United States, the entire world seems to be on fire with revolution. And while the media machine is occasionally mentioning some of the individual revolts in passing, no American media is placing all of these revolts into the larger context of all the other revolts. These insurrections are highly buried in both context and in content. But one common factor shared by most of them is widespread anger over government corruption, especially in the face of ever-increasing poverty. These corrupt powers are not taking these insurrections lying down, of course. Most of these uprisings are prompting authorities to go into a state of exception, wherein they start doing things like enforcing when and where people can be, and or they're granting special powers to the military or the police, and or they are passing new laws that made previously everyday actions illegal, and or when they start feeling cornered, they simply open fire. And so, as a public service, this week the Thunderbolts will provide a very quick rundown of some of these insurrections and revolutions. And so first, let's start in the location of the only successful slave revolt in all history. That would be Haiti. Haitians have been on the streets for weeks demanding the removal of President Jovenel Moïse for widespread corruption and for rising fuel costs. Jovenel Moïse is, of course, the dictator of choice and picked by the American war machine. But tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets in an insurrectionary street movement that has paralyzed the country. Protesters have been violently clashing with authorities who have often been responding by opening fire. And significantly, the Haitians have targeted wealthy neighborhoods with mass demonstrations. So now we move from Haiti to the Sudan, where thousands are taking to the streets to call for disbanding the current government, which is a leftover from former President Omar al-Bashir's political machine that was overthrown recently. All right, so now from Sudan to Ecuador. Yes, in Ecuador, there is also a mass insurrection going on across the country. In this case, in response to harsh austerity measures that are enacted in hopes of securing an IMF loan. Ha ha. And significantly, indigenous movements have been playing a major role in this insurrection. And unlike most of Latin America, Ecuador is still a majority indigenous nation. In mid-October, the president announced that they were killing the austerity bill and would instead work with indigenous groups involved in the protests. And meanwhile, in Chile, a massive insurrectionary movement has led to the government calling in the military and declaring martial law. Violent clashes have continued in the streets. There's a general strike, and the situation continues to evolve. Mass insurrectionary protests have also broken out in Lebanon. Again, instigated by widespread corruption and universal discontent against the state's plans for new taxes. In Lebanon, authorities have also opened fire upon the demonstrators. And meanwhile, in Catalonia, after the Spanish state moved to enact prison sentences against leading politicians who were backing Catalan independence, widespread rioting is broken out in the streets, including heavy clashes with the fascist right. And in the latest round of demonstrations in Hong Kong, they're attacking and burning banks, throwing Molotov cocktails, and destroying metro stations and shops. And meanwhile, in Honduras, back in the good old days of Barack Obama, one of the first foreign policy adventures that the Obama conducted was overthrowing a popular and democratically elected government in Honduras and then installing a bunch of murdering, corrupt, right-wing fascists who immediately began imposing exceptionally hard austerity measures upon a country that was already entirely too austere to begin with. So now in response, riots have broken out across Honduras, and for months now, demonstrators have been calling for a removal of the president due to both the extreme austerity measures and the small mountain of evidence indicating that the president took money from the drug cartels to finance his presidential campaign. And amongst this evidence is the fact that the president's brother was recently convicted for drug trafficking in an American court. There are many other insurrections and revolutions happening, including some very interesting things happening in both France and Greece. So it would seem that the revolution might already be happening now, and it's just that they aren't telling us about it. But regardless, we need to take a station break one way or the other. We'll be back in just a minute. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. All right. You better grab on to something, because here we go again. So, since viruses basically colonize our cells and then appropriate our natural resources for their own purpose, then I guess now we may have a slight idea of what the Earth might feel like when we start strip mining coal. In Philip K. Dick's novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?, the central protagonist makes his living hunting down and killing androids that are so human-like it is hard to identify them. And if that plot sounds familiar, that is because they made a movie called Blade Runner, starring Harrison Ford, that was based upon Mr. Dick's novel. Now, well, maybe we could repurpose Harrison Ford to target viruses. Ha ha. So, whatever inconveniences you are currently experiencing due to the cancellation of our world, just consider this. The Community Care Center and the library are also closed, meaning that our houseless population no longer has access to showers, to laundry, to electricity, to a phone, nor access to the many health, mental health, and housing services that are normally accessed through the Community Care Center. And even if the houseless had $3 to spend for a cup of coffee and thus gain access to an electrical outlet, all sit-down restaurants are also closed. The houseless have nowhere to wash their hands, and the houseless no longer even have a legal place to be in Olympia, since it is illegal for them to be on the sidewalks during business hours, and the sidewalks are pretty much all that is left. For those who aren't woods people, which also means that the houseless have nowhere to quarantine themselves should they contract the COVID-19 virus. But once again, even though I am houseless myself, I find myself in the somewhat elitist position of having many advantages not available to the bulk of the houseless population. I have a truck to hang out in, for instance, meaning that I have a personal space in which I can usually be without hassle. And yet another advantage I enjoy is that I have a converter wherein I can charge my computer and my cell phone from my truck battery. But since I have a weak truck battery that I can't afford to replace right now, then that means I need to start my truck after about an hour of charging. And if I may indulge a little understatement, using a gasoline-powered 350-cubic-inch internal combustion engine to charge a cell phone is, let us say, not real energy efficient. Rather like using a 357 Magnum to shoot a fly, in fact. And please, do not tell Greta Thunberg I'm doing this. I certainly don't need her in my face. On the other hand, since there is usually a 2 to 3 hour wait at the CCC to take a shower, I recently purchased a senior discounted membership at the YMCA for that purpose. But since the Y is also closed these days, then I also no longer have any place to take a shower either. And I'm not sure what to do about that. Except to maybe start hitting up friends to use their shower or something. And that is likely to be an unwelcome ask, since that would hardly be a socially distant practice. Any volunteers, by the way? But I guess if this is the worst inconvenience I experience, than I figured. I'm doing just fine. All right. So next, as a public service, the Thunderbolt would like to present the Thunderbolt Helpful Household Hints for maintaining proper social distance. And hint number one is adopting the practice that I have been forced by circumstance to adopt myself, and don't take a shower for a week and a half. And I also heard the story of a woman who is walking around with a yardstick, and she is pointing her yardstick in a threatening manner at anyone who comes too close. So anyway, I generally try to focus on important news that everyone else is ignoring. And no one is ignoring COVID-19. But there is so much bullshite going around, some of which I contributed to myself in my newsletter, I'm sad to say. And so I decided I needed to report upon COVID-19 anyway. And I felt special responsibility in this case, since I did previously misreport upon the subject. As far as specific actions to take, my own suggestion number one would be to completely ignore anything that Donald frigging Trump has to say about anything. The man is a clueless buffoon, and he is much worse than useless in this situation. And I really wish he would either just shut up, or that the press would simply start ignoring him. That said, I very recently pointed out that authoritarians always seek to isolate us from one another, and that they always seek to make us all afraid of each other, so that we will then look to Big Brother to protect us from this scary, scary world and from all these scary, scary people. This pandemic seems custom made for that purpose. We are now not only siloed, but we are literally siloed into little miniature individual personal silos that are shared only with whomever we happen to live with. The Justice Department is already seeking to use COVID-19 as an excuse to start detaining people without trial. However, my speculation in my newsletter concerning this virus having originated in a Chinese bioweapons lab not only turned out to be a serious journalistic faux pas on my part, but I was very quickly able to thoroughly debunk my own story. Evidently, the genetic data irrefutably show that COVID-19 is not derived from any previously used viral backbone, meaning that it is highly unlikely to have been created in a lab. Evidently, there are several major indicators that the virus itself is almost certainly a new viral mutation that jumped from some thus far unknown animal species to humans. Bats and snakes have already both been blamed for COVID-19, but the guilty species is not yet known. as far as finding the facts on COVID-19, I decided to consult the people who would know about such things, meaning the experts who've been working with and studying such pandemics for decades. And amongst that demographic is Michael T. Osterholm, PhD. For one thing, Dr. Osterholm predicted the current pandemic a few years ago, as well as predicting that we would be completely unprepared for it. According to Dr. Osterholm and other experts, COVID-19 is very easy to transmit, and people are contagious before showing any symptoms. There has been widespread transmission of this disease going on for a long time already, meaning that a whole bunch of people already have COVID-19, and a whole bunch of people have been spreading COVID-19. And according to experts on viral pandemics, things are going to get much worse before they get any better. In fact, I've heard several experts predict that largely due to the rump's incompetence, scientists are saying that there will likely be millions of infections and hundreds of thousands of deaths in the United States alone over the next few months. As far as protections, surgical masks are ineffective, much less those cheap pieces of crap that you used to be able to purchase at Lowe's before everyone bought all of them up. You need an N35 respirator, if you can find one. And another concern is the fact that domestic violence always peaks during times of high stress. And I imagine that is going to be even more so in cases wherein the abuser and the abused are not only living under high stress, but also literally stuck together in a house 24/7. Some people have been reporting that the coming warm weather might stop COVID-19. But that theory seems contradicted by the fact that there are major outbreaks in Singapore, where it is warm and wet, in Saudi Arabia, where it is warm and dry, and in Australia, where they're coming to the end of their summer. The best evidence indicates that this is going to last for months rather than weeks, and that we have just started on this journey. And the length of the journey and the final destination of the journey are still largely unknown. I find this both to be very scary and very exciting. And whatever happens, we aren't going to be the same in the end. I am anxious and excited to see what we are going to become next. It is up to us, after all. We can take command of this ship, or we can leave such decisions to the usual suspects and then helplessly ride out their storm, hoping for the best. That's it for news and commentary. Before we get to the music this week, though, Rainier Avenue Radio is in the midst of their very first fund drive, and I strongly encourage you to support this invaluable community resource. Rainier Avenue Radio makes the Rainier Avenue community stronger by helping you to stay informed about events in your community and events that affect your community. These are your neighbors, your friends, and coworkers, most of whom volunteer a lot of time, energy, and resources in order to bring this service to you. This is grassroots communication and activism at its best. And Rainier Avenue Radio has asked me to convey a message to listeners, which I am most happy to do. Quote, Rainier Avenue Radio is a people-oriented media outlet dedicated to amplifying the diverse voices of our community. We are asking you to make a difference and invest in our independent organization so that we can continue to enrich our community through the programs that you love. And we need your help. We are kicking off our summer campaign to support Rainier Avenue Radio. From now until August 1st, we are asking you to make a gift in support of our work. Go to RainierAvenueRadio.world and click on Donate to make a gift. Every gift matters, and we are working to raise the resources needed to fund the programming we need. Your collective contributions support programs like this and events like the Call to Conscience Museum, Make Music Day, Summer Youth Classes, the Generational Wealth Campaign, and much more. And your donation support, producing community-created programming and live broadcasts from community events, delivering our digital media and broadcasting training programs, and cultivating a community platform for local information and news. Thank you for partnering with us to amplify diverse voices in our community. Unquote. So, now it's time to play some music. And since it would seem a good part of humanity now has a disease, I'd say that maybe we need the cure. Enjoy. We'll be right back. was Hot, 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 and from
Please
The Cure.
Note that The Thunderbolt is on Facebook.
See you next week.
You can find links to the show and to the show notes, or you can now go directly to the Thunderbolt WordPress site, which is at dana98501.wordpress.com.
Thank you very much.